Boker Tov. Okay. So today, as you see on your pages, we are at Perek Tishii, the ninth chapter, here in the second volume of Ali Shur, which Rav Volbi refers to as Shleimus VeGadlus, wholeness and greatness. And the truth is that I struggled a lot with this chapter. Good morning, everyone. Okay, we have some more sheets over there. Welcome. I struggled a lot with this chapter, trying to figure out, number one, should we learn this chapter? Okay, there are more sheets right here. Sheets and dinner RSVPs are going around. Good morning. Okay, there still should be more sheets here. Judy, you can grab one of these. Okay. So we're at Perek Chi, Shleimus VeGadlus. I'm still not sure if this is the right call, so you'll have to decide, although we're not going to go through the whole chapter. Judy, if you go over here also, this way my neck does not feel it. It's okay. Go with the wall. Okay. If I come home today looking like this, everybody will know why. I'm like balancing. I need physical therapy from this chair.
She's going
to
be like, too.
Thanks, Debbie. All right. Now we're a little more balanced. Okay. So I'll tell you why I struggled with this. I struggled a lot with this chapter, and I wondered whether we should skip it or we should learn it or maybe try to think about it in a frame that relates to us. So I chose the third option. We're not going to go through the whole chapter. And it's beautiful and it's awesome and it's amazing. And people in this room, some of you are on a very high spiritual level, which is beyond my reach. So for some of you, this would be a great chapter. But for us, as a collective, we're going to read the introduction here. We're going to learn the introduction. We're going to be like, how does this relate to me? How do I fit with this? And even if you don't have it in front of you, we're only going to pick a few lines today because we're really going to think about it in a reflective way. The chapter is called Shleimus, which means shalem, whole, and godless, greatness. It's already pretty intimidating and intense. Right? What is Shleimus? So he says, Shleimus is a mitzvah, it's tamim tiyeh im Hashem Elokecha. To be whole, to be complete. You could argue, for example, from a halachic standpoint, we refer to a karban that's being offered in the Beis HaMikdash as a perfect animal. The word tamim in the context of a karban means it has no blemish. So here, the Torah, I'm not sure if this is the most accurate translation. It's probably not. Certainly in this context of tamim tiyeh Hashem Elokecha, it probably means you should be wholesome, whole, but the Targum, which Rav Volbi quotes here, is shalim, shalem, whole, complete, which sounds like it means perfect. That's very challenging. In many cases, not only is perfection elusive, perfection is destructive. There's a whole body of literature that tries to help some of us who are perfectionists save us from killing ourselves in different ways. The notion, and that's the first giant chunk of this chapter, is what he defines as is fulfilling the mitzvahs in our capacity, al tzad hayoser tov, in the best way possible. It's a very challenging thing. Now, of course, it's an aspiration, it's an ideal, it's what we strive for, but how do we navigate that practically? I'm only speaking self-reflectively because, you know, I didn't get to Shacharis on time this morning. Some days I do, but not today. There are many factors in that equation, but if I had gotten up an hour earlier, I probably would have gotten to Shacharis on time. If I'd gotten up 20 minutes earlier, I probably would have gotten to Shacharis on time. But the idea that we're going to look at our mitzvos and our avoda as being 100% perfect, and that there's nothing that needs to be addressed, it's a very good goal for a Baal Musar. But for us as practical people, I think it's a big challenge. So somebody might say, you're a heretic. I'm just trying to be practical here. Like, how do we relate to Shleimus? That's the first question that I want to ask ourselves. When we're learning the Sefer Al Derech Avoda, what does that mean for us? That's the first question. The second topic that he talks about in this chapter is the topic of godless, of greatness. If you thought being perfect was hard, just wait till you get to being great. Right? That's the next level, right? Because he says that Shleimus is a mitzvah. In the beginning of the second paragraph, Shleimus hi mitzvah, tamim tiyem Hashem Elokecha, but godless, greatness, that is megama chinuchis. That is an aspirational goal. It's an educational goal. Wow. Okay. He says, first, of course, you have to get to the level of shleimus. You have to be full and complete before you get to the level of greatness. But what does that even mean for us? What does that mean for a regular person? Now, he does point out, and I think there is an element of truth to this, of course, that each one of us has the potential for shleimus and godless. And I think that's the first thing that we need to remember. Because while on the one hand, maybe we could never accomplish the level of shleimus, of wholeness, or greatness of one particular person that we look up to, but there is an element of shleimus to live up to our own potential. What's my role? Am I doing that completely? You know, maybe my role is to daven for 8 minutes a day. Well, am I doing 8 minutes? Right? The first thing when we think about this question of shleimus and godless is that it's got to be relative to us. Yes, of course we're intimidated by it, but on the other hand, we say, wait a second. You know, the famous story of Reb Zusha, the great Hasidic master Reb Zusha, when he was going to leave the world, his students saw that he was crying. So they said to him, Rebbe, why are you crying? He said, because when I go to the next world, they're not going to ask me why wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu, and why wasn't Aaron a Kohen, and why wasn't the Baal Shem Tov. They're going to ask me why wasn't Zusha. So I think the first thing to think about is shleimus and godless in a personalized way. What is my personal shleimus? What does it mean for me to be shalem, to be whole? What are my talents? What are my abilities? What's my potential? Am I filling that potential? These weeks we're talking about, in the parashas, we're talking about a terrific duo, Moshe and Aaron. And Rashi points out, the quote from Chazal, that sometimes it says Moshe and Aaron, sometimes it says Aaron and Moshe. Why? To tell you that they're equal. Is that really true? What do you mean they were equal? Moshe Rabbeinu was the Adon Hanavim. He was the prophet on a sui generis level, and a unique level which is beyond compare. He spoke to God panim el panim. So what are you telling me they were equal? So I once heard a nice pshat that they each had their own distinct roles. Moshe fulfilled his role to the max, and Aaron fulfilled his role to the max. They weren't the same. They were definitely different. And depending on which side you look at it, a lot of times we are tempted to think about, well, which is better? We're always asking, which is better, chocolate or vanilla? So obviously, chocolate is better. No. But wait a second, you're thinking to yourself, but so is that really true? What if you're trying to, it's late at night and everyone is sleeping, but you have a shtigli yetzahara, so you're going to make a berry smoothie in the kitchen. So you take frozen blueberries. I'm just saying theoretically, if this may have happened to you in the last 24 hours, maybe. You get blueberries and strawberries. If you have fresh, better. If you don't, you get frozen. You put it in. You put the milk. You're going to get ice cream. Are you going to put chocolate ice cream with your strawberries and the Greek yogurt? No. You're not going to do that.
Aye, chocolate is better, kayadua. But it doesn't mean chocolate's not better, it's just different. So when you want to have a huge bowl with Oreos smushed into it, so it's better to have chocolate, at least in my experience. But if you want to make, we can discuss it later. You know, this is not Torah B'Sinai, subjective. But sometimes, so why do we always have to ask, well, which is better? It's not about which is better. It's about which is appropriate for that situation. I have a good friend of mine who is the principal of a school, and he taught me something about hiring people, because one of the things that I'm supposed to do in the Kollel is hire rabbis. He said, there's no such thing as a bad applicant. He said, it's that applicant is not the right fit for your organization or for that position. It was such a chachmistic thing to say. It's true. He's not the right fit for this. He could be the right fit for something else. So when we think about shlemus and godless, why are we thinking about it as better or even super better? We're thinking about other people. We're learning about great people and we are inspired by them. And then we say, well, my shlemus is not that level. The answer is, so what? Aaron didn't walk around all day and say, you know, I'm not Moshe Rabbeinu. First of all, he's my younger brother. He definitely would not do that. Right? But because Aaron had his own thing going. And Moshe Rabbeinu, when he had to, the first week, the Gemara describes, based on the Pesukim, that Moshe Rabbeinu, he worked as the quasi-Kohen Gadol in the first week of the inauguration in the Mishkan. And then you know what he had to do? He had to take his white jacket and hang it up and give it over to his brother Aaron. And that's it. He was out. So he did go around every day saying, ah, you know, if I was only Aaron, I would go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Everybody has their own thing. So Moshe Rabbeinu's shlemus was his shlemus. And Aaron's shlemus was his shlemus. His completeness. So for us, the first way, I think, to battle the challenge of feeling overwhelmed by this chapter of Shlemus and Godless is not looking at it uniformly, objectively, saying there is one perfection, there is one Shlemus out there, there is one greatness, one Godless. Because if we do that, when we try to measure up to that outside standard, we're gonna end up with a big problem. We're going to end up wishing all day, I wish I was Moshe, I wish I was Aaron, I wish I was Sarah Schneer, I don't know who I wish I was. You know? It's totally debilitating to do that. But to ask myself, what's my shlemus? What's my godless? That's the first thing. That's number one. I think there are three other things to think about when we have a conversation and reflect on shlemus and godless. And it's actually the opposite of what I just suggested. What I just suggested was that when we think about shlemus and godless, we think about it personally, in a vacuum, irrespective of others. What is my unique circumstance? Which I think is 100% true. But I think at the same time, sometimes if we only think about it in our limited life experience, whatever we have experienced thus far, we may not realize the potential that we have within ourselves. So part of potentially, I would suggest, thinking about shlemus and godless for ourselves is when we think about people who are in different circumstances and who open our eyes to possibilities that we would have never previously considered, that helps us realize what our own inner potential is. You know, you take someone who, in their experience, they never had a serious, rigorous Jewish education. So, in their mind, what is shlemus and godless? That doesn't include Jewish scholarship. It just doesn't, because they were never educated in that way. But then they meet someone else. They meet a woman who also never had a big Jewish education, but she decided that she's taking on Nach Yomi. She's going to learn one parak of Tanakh every day. She started this when she was a chves, 20 years old, when she was in college. She couldn't read Hebrew, but she read the translation every day. And she meets you and she tells you, yeah, since then, I've been through Tanakh 6 times. There are lots of people like this. And you start to say to yourself, well, you know what? Maybe I could do that. When you reach out and you open yourself up, we open ourselves up to big people, sometimes we realize we have potential in ourselves that we never considered before. And what we thought before was the fulfillment of our shleimus, this was going to be our max, we realize, you know what? There's a little more. We could accomplish even more in terms of our own shleimus and our own godless.
Burnt out. So you can start it and you can do that for a month and then life gets in the way and then you stop doing it.
Okay, so that's a very important question. The question Galia raises is a practical question of how not to fall off the train, right? There's the burnout question, but there's also the consistency question. So I would say the solution to that is making your goal very, very small. Very manageable, and leaving in potential wiggle room for what you need to be able to accomplish in your own situation. And then, a la a great book, I think I recommended it already once before, called Atomic Habits, that when you fall off, you get right back on. So I'll share with you just from my own personal experience. So when I learned in Keren B'Yavneh in Yeshiva, so my Rebbe, Rav Moshe Staff, who I still have a connection to, when we went to Israel this past time, I brought our 2 older boys, we met with him, it was great. So he gave me a good piece of advice on this, and he said, you should always have something you learn every day. But he said to me, he said that what that means is that you have to be very committed to it. It has to be very small, very manageable. And you have to be committed to learning it even when you don't understand it. So that means if you're going to do, let's say, a Mishnah a day, today is the day to learn that Mishnah. So then you're going to learn that Mishnah even if you're very dead tired and you're just going to read the words and you don't understand it. He said, don't worry, you'll come back to it later. So when I left Yeshiva, I got there when I was 16 because I left high school early. I left when I was 18. I started with a little bit at a time. And over the years, I have continued ever since that time, something every day. And different years, it's been different things. But it has made a tremendous difference. And at the same time, I have found these necessary wiggle rooms that enable you to continue your commitment. So for example, let's say if you were to commit to doing a blot of Gemara every day. Well, I'll tell you a secret. A blot of Gemara is 2 sides of a page. That could be very long. Well, what if you commit to doing a blot of Gemara every day, and it's like 2:30 in the morning, and you haven't done your blot of Gemara yet today? You're like, this is going to be a problem. Even if you just read the words, you're like dead tired. Well, there's a Gemara, a blot of Gemara, in the middle of Masechet Zvachim that has 2 lines on it. 1 amud that has 2 lines. And then the next page, it's a very easy amud, it's only like 8 lines. So you can say, you know what? I can't do my blot of Gemara today because I'm learning Maseches Brachos, and I'm up to page 19, and I just can't keep to it because I'm just dead tired and I can't do it. But you say, you know what? I can keep to it in a different way. Who said I had to do this Gemara in exactly this order? I know there's a Gemara, and there's also a Gemara in Bava Kamma also with like a tiny, minuscule page. So you keep your commitment, but you have that way. Or let's say theoretically, I also was more of this heter. Let's say you're flying to Israel overnight. So does that count? Is that 1 day of learning or 2 days? I think it's 1. I would paskin it's 1 day because you didn't sleep in your bed that night. So you didn't go to sleep. So I think you can learn 1 day worth of learning because it's not really even a full. So the point is if you set it up initially where that you have a very small commitment that is very manageable and you have ways of accomplishing that commitment even when it's very difficult. So if you're going to learn a parak of Tehillim every day, well, when you get to 119, you better be in it to win it because you're going to be there all afternoon. So let's say you get to 119 and you have a flight to somebody's wedding. Perfect. When you get to 119 and it's your kid's wedding, so you say, you know what, today It's okay. I'm going to do 121 today, and I'll do 119 tomorrow. So to me, the consistency factor is the crucial factor in this project. And to do that, you have to set it up initially that it's not going to be too overwhelming. And that you say, you know what? Maybe I have to read these 10 psukim of Tehillim today. I'm not going to understand what they say. It doesn't matter. That's not the point. The point is to have some consistency. Any other comments on this point? What's that? Atomic Habits. Great book about habits. All right, we're getting a little bit off track, but it's an important topic. Look, this has been in the news of late in our minds because of the Daf Yomi. You know, so what are people thinking about that we can do for learning every day? So what I'm setting up here is a counterbalance, that on the one hand, when it comes to thinking about godlessness and shlemus, it needs to be personalized. We can't look at other people, and we can't look at great people for sure, because it's going to make us give up, and we're going to have yish. And that's the worst thing. Yish means despair. There's nothing worse in Avodas Hashem than despair. But on the other hand, if we don't look to great people, there's a beautiful biography of Rav Shlomo Freifeld, who was a tremendous inspirational figure. He was a huge person, physically imposing, a beacon of love. He opened the Shaar Yashiv Yeshiva for boys in the 50s and 60s and 70s who were like totally lost. They had a place in loving Hashem. Amazing person. So it's a biography called Reb Shlomo. It's about Reb Shlomo Freifeld. And he has a chapter in there called about people he called big people. We have to look at those people because they sometimes can be the mirror to us and to realize that we can accomplish more than we thought we could. We thought we could only do A, this was going to be our shlemus, but we realized we could do more. So those are, on the one end, they are opposing, but they're not contradictory. We need to be rooted in ourselves, but we also need to be stretching ourselves. And by looking beyond, it's not that we're trying to compare ourselves to those people. I'm never going to get to the level of Reb Shlomo Freifeld. But if I see what Reb Shlomo Freifeld can do, maybe I can see something more in my own orbit. What else can I accomplish? That's one dialectic, I think, that we need to think about when we think about shlemus and godliness. That's one. The second is that shlemus and godliness each have something on our level. He quotes later on, Rav Volpe, the Pasuk says, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem. Yaakov came Shalem, whole, Ir Shechem, to Shechem. What did he come whole from? Where was he coming from? The battle that he had with the angel, the wrestling match that he was encountered, he was approached overnight by this mysterious man, and they fought, and he was injured, and he succeeded, and he gets to Shechem. Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem. That's what it says. Is Yaakov perfect? Is his life perfect? Well, right now, in this story, we're in Parshas Vayishlach. In about 5 minutes, we're going to get to Parshas Vayeshev, where his sons are going to get into a little bit of a tiff, you could say. No? Not perfect. Not perfect. And yet it says, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem. He was Shalem. So perhaps one takeaway from this is that a measure of shlemus is accomplishment. When you accomplish something, when you vanquish a demon, the ish that you are struggling with, and you are able to best that challenge, that's a level of shlemus. Yaakov comes to Shechem, he says, I accomplished something. Whoever that man was, that mysterious angel, maybe it was internal, he says, I beat that angel. That's a level of shlemus. So he comes to Shechem, he's shalem. In that aspect of his life, in that small area, he felt and he understood he had accomplished something. He was shalem. Other things weren't perfect. His kids and his family were about to, on their level, disintegrate. His son is going to go into exile. He's going to be without prophecy. That's not shalem. But that's okay. Because in this area, if the Torah says about it and about him, he was shalem. So when we think about ourselves, we're like, oh man, shlemus, how am I going to be shalem in my life? Godless, how am I going to be at the level of godless? I can't see that in any way. But you know what I could do? I can be victorious in one struggle. If I vanquish that one struggle, I'm shalem. It doesn't mean I'm shalem in whole in every dimension, but in that dimension, I'm shalem. That's what it says. That's Aleph. Beis, when it talks about, when Rav Volbi talks about godless, so godless greatness, of course, there is that overwhelming, and many of us have met people in our lives who are, they just are on the level of godless. I've met some people like this. But godless, I wonder if it can also be not just a noun, to be gadol, to be big, great. It cannot just be an adjective. It cannot just be a verb, like vayigdal Moshe vayetze alechav. Moshe Rabbeinu became gadol. He grew and he went out to his brothers. But maybe it's also an adverb. And I was thinking about this. I didn't have a good example of it. I'm going to have to think further. To do something with the quality of godless. Because what does it mean? Vayigdal Moshe vayetze alechav. Moshe Rabbeinu grew up. He became gadol. He was growing, and he went out to his brothers. Some svarim say that the word gadol that we say in Shemona Esrei, hakel hagadol, gadol refers to expansiveness. It's an expression of a midah of chesed. Chesed means to think about and to expand to the sphere of others. Vayigdal Moshe, in what sense did Moshe became gadol? He became gadol in that vayetze alechav. He started to worry about the next guy. What was the expression of his growing up, becoming gadol? Is vayetze alechav, going to see what other people are suffering, how difficult it is for them in Egypt. Gedula, godless, is a description of how, it can be perhaps, a description of how we lead our lives. Are our lives lived through the prism of godless? Are the actions that we do reflective of an orientation of godless? That's the question, perhaps, that we can think about godless. Maybe redefining godless in another way of not just defining it as greatness, hall of fame, as my sons will say, GOAT, which is a new term. It didn't used to be a term, but now it's a term. You know this term, greatest. Godless is GOAT, that's one, greatest of all time. But it's also a quality. Do we walk with godless and consider the people who are around us? If the concept of godless is chesed, is expansiveness, then we can live our entire lives. We may not be the greatest of all time, whatever, but we lived with godless. There was a dimension of godless which was reflected in all the things that we did. Did we eat with godless? When I was in yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva used to implore the guys. In Hebrew, he would say, Lo lit napel ala ochel, not to fall on top of the food, not to climb on the next bacher to get the last vegetarian hot dog. And that was the hasagas. It wasn't like... But I think that's another aspect for us, that we may not be greatest of all time, whatever, but if we have the dimension of godless, that's something we can apply to our lives. Gadol means expansiveness. Is my consciousness considering those people around me, those needs around me, the issues that other people are struggling with, or am I just defined in my narrowness? So to summarize, because we're already over time, this chapter about Shlemus and godless is important to talk about because we need to address it. On the one hand, it's challenging because to think about true wholeness, true Shlemus, albeit a great goal, is sometimes very depressing and maybe even debilitating because how far we are from that. The idea of Shlemus as being a mitzvah and godless even being farther than that. But thinking about it in the frames that we suggested maybe can help us. That on the one hand, Shlemus and godless need to be thought about in a personalized, subjective way so that we know that we're accomplishing our own shlemus and our own godless, not comparing ourselves to anybody else. At the same time, we need to look at people who are greater than us so that we can stretch and create a stretch goal for ourselves. Now, it's important, I would say, stretch goals are good, not related to daily commitments. Daily commitments should not be stretch goals, because if they are, that's pushing us too far. Daily commitments should be almost a layup that we can create a consistency. But that's the first dialectic. The second thing to think of is shlemus as it relates to one particular episode, that we can accomplish something by conquering this challenge, and godless, thinking about it as a quality, as a type of life that we live. Is it a life which reflects greatness? Greatness in the sense of being larger than ourselves, being considerate of others, thinking about what the biggest definition of ourselves can be. And that is going to be reflected through different aspects of our life. So I would hope it was still worth, even though it is a tough topic, it's still worth reflecting together on this issue of shlemus and godless. So thanks everybody for coming.